you lie, my father? Where do you lie, my son? Where do you lie, my own true love? When will the truth be won? Our neighbors, they came with 100 years' hate. Our neighbors, they came with guns. Our neighbors, they came for our menfolk, and they slew them every one. Where do you lie, my father? Where do you lie, my son? Where do you lie, my own true love? When will the truth be won? I have sought out your grave with my mother. I have sought out your grave in vain. I have sought the bare bones of the truth and the men. Father, where are you lying? I have cried out your name to the four winds. I have cried out your name till the dawn. I have cried in the arms of your sister dear. Where do you lie, my son? Where do you lie, my father? Where do you lie, my son? Where do you lie, my own true love? When will the truth be won? I have dreamed of your breath upon me. I have dreamed of your yellow hair. I have dreamed of the sounds of your dying love. Where do you lie, my dear? Where do you lie, my father? Where do you lie, my son? Where do you lie, my own true love? When will the truth be won?
And that was another number from Roy Bailey's album, Coda, Where Do You Lie? Welcome to Bathroom Spears Broadsides, twice weekly show I do. My name is Robert Norris, and I'm talking to you from the studios of Free Radio, Santa Cruz, here in Santa Cruz. We're at 101.1 FM and freakradio.org, and you can reach us by phone live if you want to be on the air at 427-3772. 427-3772, area code 831. Second line, in case the first one is busy, is 469-3119, and I'll try to juggle that if we ever get that many calls, which doesn't usually happen, but occasionally it does. If you want to catch me off air, I'm on the Huff line, because I work with Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, Huff, and the number is 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF. Give me a call if you got a breaking news story that you don't want to bring on the air for some reason. You want an interview, possibly. You want to correct something. You want some personal contact. You want to volunteer with Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. If you want to contact the radio station itself, like if you have a PSA, public service announcement, or a donation, or a question, or you want to be a member of the collective itself, maybe looking for your own show, you can call the radio station's voicemail at 427-4523, 427-4523. Or you can actually, more direct method is to go online, if you have access to a computer, to freakradio.org, which is a place where you, of course, can catch our stream, but you can also get more information, download some archives, and also fill out an application. And you can mail in a donation or a question or a letter. To the snail mail address at FRSC P.O. Box 7507, 95061. Post Office Box 7507, 95061. And that's in Santa Cruz. And if you don't catch any of this, you can either call the Huff line at 423-HUFF. I'll get back to you and give you all these numbers again after the show, or possibly somewhere down the road. I'm not at the line right now, but I pick up messages regularly. Or you can call the voicemail of the studio. Wow, that's a loud sound. And you can catch the voicemail at 427-4523. But let's see who's calling in. Let's check it out. Hello there. You're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Robert. It's Uncle Dennis here.
Hey, Dennis. What's happening? You're on the air.
I just wanted to remind our listeners that Free Radio is going to be presenting a talk by Michael Parente on Wednesday, February 4th at 7 o'clock at the Loudon Nelson Center. Tickets will be available at the door for a sliding scale $10 to $25. And we're also going to have a dinner with Michael Parente and a chance to get a book signed and have reserved seats at the talk. And we'll have more details coming up about that. We're still firming up the details on that package. But Michael Parente, in a benefit for Free Radio Santa Cruz, Wednesday, February 4th at 7 o'clock at Loudon Nelson.
You'll also be in the studio yourself with some music tonight, right, Dennis?
I'm working on my newscast right now. I'll see you about 8 o'clock, Robert.
Music and news. Thanks a lot, Dennis.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that's Uncle Dennis is from the Cream to the Dregs. It comes up at 8. He goes on till 11. And got a lot of music, a little beer drinking, although I don't know if he can get your involved in that. But in any case, he's, as he says, he also does a lot of environmental news. And check him out right after my show at 8. So I'm going to launch pretty quickly into street interviews because I have a number of them to catch up with. I've been out there day after day, week after week, well, certainly a few days a week, getting a lot of news and views from the streets downtown Santa Cruz. And this show focuses a lot on criminalization of the poor, the kinds of essentially bad contacts that happen between police and people downtown as the police attempt to assert the sort of the gentrification ordinances, or the downtown ordinances, as they're sometimes called, in Santa Cruz, which mirror a lot of other cities' ordinances, although we are actually kind of a bad pioneer in these ordinances, and originally passed back in 1994, that make it illegal to use a lot of public space in perfectly innocent ways, like sitting next to a building, even if you're not blocking, or having a sign out that says, need money, even though you say absolutely nothing else next to you. There are all kinds of attempts to give the police the license to drive away the people that they consider to be problems they don't like for one reason or another. I'm also going to do a little talking about and reading about the murder of Oscar Grant in the Oakland BART station. And it's been on the media a lot, finally, because people were out with a lot of peaceful protest, and that got buried, and as the media, as it usually does, emphasizes the few windows broken and the few fires that were set and the anger over this 22-year-old unarmed black man's murder by a rapid transit BART police officer on New Year's Day. This is a case of a guy lying on the ground, as the officer instructed, face down on his stomach, who got shot in the back and killed. And the officer, they came up with a lot of cooked up stories. I'm going to read you some of the critical reviews of what happened. First, there's a press release from Amnesty International released today. Amnesty International calls Oscar Grant shooting a clear-cut abuse of power. And this is how it reads from Washington, D.C. Oscar Grant, a 22-year-old unarmed black man, was shot in the back by a Bay Area Rapid Transit police officer on New Year's Day. On the day of his funeral, Dalia Hashad, director of Amnesty International's USA's Identity-Based Discrimination Program, released the following statement. Quote, when an unarmed man is shot in the back after police put him face down on the ground, it is time for authorities to demand action, not patience. Days after the incident, the officer still had not been interviewed. The delay in this critical part of the investigation hints at the callousness to the worth of human life to a public that is all too familiar with racial profiling, police brutality, and cover-ups. Whatever the final investigation reveals, the bottom line is that there is never justification to shoot an unarmed person, especially one who is restrained. It is an obvious violation of the most obvious and most basic human rights standards and a clear-cut abuse of power, unquote. Amnesty International, as many know, is a Nobel Peace Prize-winning grassroots organization with more than 2.2 million supporters, activists, some of them are atheists, and volunteers, some of them are not, in more than 150 countries campaigning for human rights worldwide. The organization investigates and exposes abuses, educates and mobilizes the public, and works to protect people wherever justice, freedom, truth, and dignity are denied. Well, sometimes, somewhat. I actually was declared a prisoner of conscience by Amnesty International in 1996 for the crime of serving bagels and rice in San Francisco. I was arrested, I was convicted, and I was jailed for a month. That's a pretty brief period of time as a prisoner of conscience, but the point was that there were many, many others who were arrested and harassed and some brutalized for the same kind of behavior. And we have the same kind of attacks on food servers who provide food to the poor and make public and very obvious and blatant the bad priorities of cities, states, and federal government regarding the criminalization and the priorities they choose over criminalizing people who are poor rather than criminalizing the corporations and warmongers who essentially perpetuate that kind of poverty through the huge misappropriation of funds that's happening nationwide leads, in some cases, to devastating recessions and depressions. But another story. Here's another story about the killing of Oscar Grant called Personal Security on the Rails. California man was shot and killed execution-style New Year's morning after he was yanked off a BART train with a group of others. This is from the D.C. Transportation Examiner, a story by Catherine M. Hill. Reports say that Oscar Grant, 22, was peaceful and non-resistant before he was shot by a BART officer who was possibly intending to use a stun gun. In the few moments before he was shot, he was pleading with his friends, according to the San Francisco Bayview, who are all cuffed up, to calm down and be cooperative with police. Grant was seen begging the police officers who had pulled tasers out and pointed them at the heads of his friends not to shoot. For reasons unknown to us, the police officer pushed Grant to the ground. One officer kneeled on his neck while the other officer pulled out a gun and shot him point blank in the back. The bullet went through his back, hit the ground, and bounced back up and pierced his lung, killing him. The police then ran around and terrified witnesses by taking away their cell phones and video cameras for, quote, evidence, unquote. The video, which was shot by a witness named Karina Vargas and has been seen by everyone on KTVU, I guess that's Channel 2 television station up in San Francisco or Oakland, was also going to be confiscated, except her train started moving as police attempted to snatch away her camera. The cops obviously did not see the other video cameras buzzing away. What precipitated the passenger's removal from the train is not reported and remains unclear, while the overall issue at hand is excessive force. And while I'm not doubting the authority of transit police, as I think the general public dismisses the authority of transit police, mall cops, and security officers, I want to feel safe on my train. And I don't know that I feel safe looking out a metro window and witnessing excessive violence, which is how the case appears. Clearly, I wasn't in San Francisco and didn't witness the incident. I want to pretend that public transit is the last place where we should feel in danger. That, with the press of a button, harassment from other officers will end. With a bevy of witnesses, crime is forced to exist elsewhere, even when I know that isn't true. I've always felt safe riding Metro, even if I've never felt like I could depend on help for directions or assistance riding Metro. When the security levels are raised, I've never felt unsafe with additional security in the form of German shepherds and large imposing artillery, but I think it will be a while until I feel great riding the BART. If you're upset about the incident, RaceWire has 5 things you can do right now, which includes contacting BART. The post includes a longer video shot by a BART rider as opposed to the short video in the newscast. And this is a website you can go to. If you Google for Oscar Grant, And if you want to look at this story, it's DC Transportation Examiner. You'll find her story and some of the links to that. Then there's a story, Bart Cop Shooting Brings Echoes of Rodney King, by Harrison Chastang. This was written today, January 8th. The videotape shooting death of Oscar Grant by a BART police officer on New Year's Day marks how far technology has advanced since the 1991 videotape beating of Rodney King. The cell phone video recorded by BART writer Katrina Vargas shows that Grant was unarmed and that he apparently was not acting in a manner that would compel an officer to consider using a firearm. Grant's death was recorded by several other cell phone video cameras and may have been recorded by BART's security cameras. Apparently it was. And they denied that, or they were confused with that, and so forth. The videos, that's my addition to the story, continuing with the story itself, the videos were posted immediately on the Internet, where they were seen by thousands, if not millions, of people before being picked up by the mainstream news media. The ongoing reporting of the Grant murder by everyday citizens armed with cell phones is a contrast to how the world learned of the King beating 18 years ago. On the evening of March 19, 1991, Los Angeles resident George Holliday heard a commotion outside his window and pointed his newly purchased Sony Handycam toward what appeared to be a gang fight. Upon zooming in, Holliday realized he was recording a group of LAPD officers taking turns beating an unarmed black man with billy clubs and metal flashlights. Holliday took the videotape to KTLA-TV, which aired the beating of Rodney King, and the rest, as they say, is history. The King beating videotape was the first time that a televised video was used to document clandestine police abuse. Police officials defended previous televised police beatings of Vietnam-era anti-war and civil rights protesters as a justified use of force, but few law enforcement professionals defended the officers' videotape beating King. Over the decades, thousands of people, particularly blacks and other non-whites, have complained about police abuse. But until the King beating video, most police abuse charges were dismissed. I think they still are, actually, but that's just my addition. Because police misconduct cases were usually based on the officer's word versus testimony by victims and eyewitnesses who often were deemed not credible by prosecutors, judges, and juries. The five officers charged in the King beating were found not guilty, despite the tape clearly showing that King was unarmed and was not resisting arrest. That verdict sparked days of violence in L.A. and outrage throughout the country. The New Year's Day murder of Oscar Grant probably wouldn't have been recorded 20 years ago. The Sony Handycam used to videotape the King beating at a foot long and weighing more than 200 and more than 2 pounds would probably have been too big and bulky for most people to casually carry around, and especially on New Year's Eve. Even if someone had had a larger camera at the Fruitville station on New Year's Day, the camera would have been so conspicuous that BART police officers may have prevented a videographer from shooting the incident. Holliday was lucky that there was an assignment officer at KTLA willing to take a look at the King beating video, and that it was a slow news day when Holliday called about the tape. If Holliday had called the station about the King video on the day of O.J.'s slow-speed chase, the Northridge earthquake, or what, or when some other major L.A. news story was breaking, assignment editors would probably have been too busy to look at the King beating video. Cell phones are so small and commonplace today that police often are oblivious to their presence and are unaware that most cell phones have the capability to shoot and instantly transmit still and video images. The women who recorded Grant's shooting said that a BART police officer attempted to seize her camera, not realizing that content shot or recorded on many cell phones can be transmitted in a few seconds to other computers or the Internet. Today's camera-equipped cell phones are virtually everywhere because phones can easily fit into a purse, pocket, or on a belt holder. Before the invention of inexpensive camcorders in the 1980s, the only people who could get video on the air were TV news crews and freelancers who could afford the six-figure video cameras, videotape, and editing equipment required to produce broadcast-quality video. The message behind the Rodney King video was that anybody with a camcorder could document police and public officials as long as someone was willing to put that content on TV or cable. Friends and relatives of Oscar Grant have used the multimedia tools of cell phone technology and the Internet to inform the world about Grant's murder, to demand accountability not only for the officer responsible for Grant's death, but for the BART Board of Directors, the public agency responsible for the BART police. And that, again, is a story by Harrison Chastang, which I think was on Beyond Cron, the website Beyond Cron, which is kind of a critique of San Francisco Chronicle stories. A little too friendly with Obama for my tastes, but sometimes there's some interesting stuff there. Finally, this story, did Bart Kopp, who killed Oscar Grant, mistake gun for taser? And this is from the San Francisco Bay View, a news analysis posted yesterday. Just as in war, in extrajudicial killings, truth is the first casualty. We cannot expect to receive any reports except those that justify, excuse, or minimize the killing of Oscar Grant by BART police at 2 a.m. New Year's Day. It begins with the first report of an officer-involved shooting, a term that serves to evade the issue of circumvention of justice and remove the shocking lethality while assigning the killer a passive role reduced to merely being involved in some unstated way. The Oakland Tribune's story, Man Dies in BART Officer-Involved Shooting, is a perfect example. The report completely removes the killer from the killing and shifts responsibility to a mischievous little self-willed but incontinent gun. Quote, an officer's gun discharged, wounding Grant. Now the San Francisco Chronicle provides an example of journalism sacrificed in the service of police deception. Quote, one source familiar with the investigation said Bart is looking into a number of things, including whether the officer had meant to fire his taser stun gun rather than his firearm. The taser excuse is so preposterous that the source preferred to remain anonymous. Why is the Chronicle printing unaccountable rumors? Yet the article begins with the official BART statement, quote, BART's police chief asked for patience from the public today after video footage surfaced showing one of his officers fatally shooting an unarmed man. He found the footage to be inconclusive, end quote. So officially, we should wait for the police investigation and not believe our lying eyes. Yet unofficially, police anonymously spread disinformation that we would have us believe that it was something less than the murder that we see in several witnesses' videos. You would think that if the policeman actually meant to fire his taser, he would have immediately admitted that mistake to clear himself from a murder charge. Why would the investigation need to be looking into that possibility? I try in vain to envision the policeman sweating under the glare of an intense interrogation about the killing when the interrogator asks, "Officer, is it possible that you might have mistaken your Glock for a taser?" I'm sure the killer cop would fall out of his seat laughing. Why is the taser excuse absurd? One, the manual states that the Taser X26 weighs 7 ounces. Depending on model and bullets loaded, a Glock pistol can weigh from 25 to 38 ounces. You don't have to be a weapons expert to feel the difference between holding about 2 pounds and holding less than half a pound. Try it. Two, police pistols are all black, sometimes with a very dark brown grip. The X26 has bright yellow markings on it. It also has a 2-digit LED display. Three, the X26 has a safety on the grip that must be released. The Glock safety is on the trigger. We'll continue the story in a moment, but looks like we have a caller. Nope, I'll finish the story and then we'll get back to the caller if the caller returns the call. So let's review the minimum steps of a taser deployment. You pull out the lightweight, brightly colored weapon. You load the cartridge onto the tip of the barrel. The cartridge is fat and rectangular, looking nothing like a pistol barrel. You reach on the grip and flip the safety up. The LED display lights up like half your digital alarm clock, then shows the percentage charge. Three. Police are taught never to use tasers in life-threatening situations, ensuring that, quote, tasers save lives mantra remains a fairy tale. So since that eliminates the split-second judgment defense, every taser policy I've seen requires a warning before firing to give the victim the opportunity to comply. Police like to report that merely pointing the taser and issuing the warning is often sufficient. To accept that the killer went through these steps without realizing he actually had in his hands a heavy, dark pistol with no LED display and no cartridge loaded or to be loaded requires the kind of suspension of belief we've not been asked to make since Plan 9 from outer space hit the screens. Most likely, this cockamamie rumor is spread by the police in order to buy time. It's damage control to pacify an angry public until they can come up with some way to blame the victim. Tuesday, the Chronicle amplified this taser mistake nonsense. Quote, Don Cameron, a former BART police sergeant and weapons expert who now teaches police officers about proper use of force, said Monday that he had watched footage of Grant's death and was convinced that the officer had meant to fire a taser. Cameron said he made his conclusion based in part on the officer's stance and the fact that a second officer moved away from Grant just before he was shot, perhaps trying to avoid a secondhand shock. End quote. Is there any end to the fictions we're asked to believe? Everyone knows tasers do not give secondhand shock because we've all seen those jive jolt sessions where police hold a reporter as the reporter gets a sample shock from a taser. We've also watched police piled on University of Florida student Andrew Mayer after he questioned Senator John Kerry at a campus forum. None moved away before or while Mayer was tasered. On the other hand, stepping away from someone pointing a Glock requires no explanation. The taser confusion rumor is now posted on Police One, a law enforcement website where, quote, you must be a confirmed law enforcement member of Police One to post a comment. The comments below are member-generated. Standing apart from the expected boo-hoos for the devastated killer is one skeptic arguing along the same lines I argued. Quote, I have a hard time understanding how one could mistake a firearm for a taser, even in a high-stress situation. The reason being that even though the taser may draw and feel similar to a firearm, one has to turn it on. What about the motor skills learned of flicking the switch to turn the taser's power on? Would that particular motor skill go out the window during high stress? It seems to me that if one pulled out their firearm, meaning to pull out their taser, one would wonder where the power switch had gone to which they attempted to turn it on, to when they attempted to turn it on. Should that not tell the mind that there is something not right with this, quote, taser? There have been at least three shootings where police claim to have mistaken their Glock for a taser. The most recent I know was in 2002 in Madeira, where Marcy Noriega killed amateur boxer Everardo Torres after he was arrested following a loud party complaint and handcuffed in the back of a squad car. Noriega was armed with the older and heavier taser M26, about 20 ounces. Madeira police did not have their tasers marked with yellow tape. They only added it after the killing. The M26 has a simple LED with no digital display, but the taser holster was on the thigh while the Glock was on the hip. No criminal charges were ever brought against Noriega. The federal district court dismissed the family's civil suit in 2005, but in May 2008, the appeals court ordered the district court to decide if Noriega acted unreasonably. So, now we have a caller. Let's see what's cooking here. Hi there, you're on Free Radio. Hello?
Hi, can I speak to Robert, please?
Yeah, you are, and indeed you're on the air. Are you trying to listen to me on the computer or on the radio?
I had you on the radio 5 minutes ago, and then you were on the computer, and then I got the phone number, and then I called you, and I turned the computer down.
You did a very good job. Thank you. So what's cooking? What can I do for you?
I want to put, can I play devil's advocate?
Okay.
Since, you know, I mean, human nature is human nature, and I understand the difference between a Glock and a heavy, gun. And I heard what you were reading. I don't know where you got that from. I haven't been listening that long. But I kind of wanted to ask what other intention that you might think the officer had in this whole thing. Do you think he was just stupid, or do you think he was intentionally, do you think he meant to kill this person? What I want to ask is what would make you happy to hear?
Well, you know, I think the issue that's being raised by the writer is not so much the officer's intention, but the intention of his higher-ups and the publicists of the police department in attempting to cover this up or soft-pedal it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I think that's really the issue. I mean, officers will make mistakes. We all make mistakes. Human beings make mistakes.
Right.
It could be, it was a mistake of some kind. It could be that he felt justified in pulling out his weapon just because he's a police officer and he can do that under some circumstances. He might feel, well, the guy was challenging his authority. He was saying, please, please don't taser these guys, my friends, according to this report. And he might have meant, to pull out his gun and teach the guy a lesson, not necessarily by shooting him, but then he might have shot him. Or he might have been carried away by an impulse. Or he might have been, it might have been a mistake. But, I mean, it's the issue is more, well, and there is an issue about, I think, people in uniform feeling hyped up and feeling that they aren't accountable and that it's not just, you know, he isn't accountable. I mean, he didn't. They postponed his interrogation endlessly until today, at which point he resigned from BART police and avoided an IA investigation where he would have had to answer questions or face a firing.
Right.
So, you know, it's...
The reporting I thought was atrocious, like you were reading, you know, the gun discharged, like the gun was its own entity or something. That
right.
was horrible.
I mean,
it was bizarre. And, you know, I live in Santa Cruz Harbor, and I've seen a man, I mean, I'm not much of a proponent for the taser, but I have seen it save a man's life. You know,
right.
I saw an officer come into a store, an establishment, where there was a man threatening employees with a blunt weapon.
Uh-huh.
And the officer came in, saw the man screaming. The man turned to the officer with this weapon in his hand. He's about 10 feet away. And the officer went to draw his gun from the right side, and he paused, and he stopped. And he went to his left side where his taser was. And I said, that man is lucky. And I saw the red dot on the guy's chest. He gave him a warning, and the guy took one step towards the cop, and the cop zapped him.
Uh-huh.
And then he arrested him and was hauled away. And the guy was a mental patient, but that's one instance where I've seen it save a man's life.
When was this caller?
Oh, it had to be probably 2 to 3 years, 2 to 3 years ago. Yeah.
Oh.
It was a local bike shop, actually, in Santa Cruz. And I was witness to it. It was the guy was coming in. He had already attacked a couple people, and the police were called, and the guy pulled up, Santa Cruz cop pulled up on his motorcycle, and you know, if the cop wouldn't have had his taser, he would have drawn his weapon, and if that assailant or if that person would have come after the cop and the gun was drawn, it would have been the bullet that went through him as opposed to the taser. And that's a very rare instance.
What was the weapon that the guy had in his hand?
It was a solid U-lock, bicycle U-lock.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yeah, and like I said, he'd already attacked two people, and he'd been struck pretty hard with an object, like, seconds before that, and it didn't faze him. So I don't know if he was high or just completely out of his mind that he didn't feel any pain, but he took a shot to the groin that would have dropped any person, but he didn't even feel it, and he kept coming. Most people, when cops deal with, when cops use the tasers, a lot of times the person is high on drugs and the taser is ineffective, or the drugs and the taser cause a heart issue where, you know, they unfortunately die. And I don't think the taser is the best answer. You know, they quit using the term non-lethal. I don't know if you've known, but they call it less lethal now.
Mm-hmm.
That's the more PC term, less lethal.
Mm-hmm.
But with this guy, I don't know. I mean, the reporting I thought was horrible, and I don't know what he did. I don't know why. You know, I've read books about military incidences where people are trained highly in the military to go and fight and in combat, and then they get into combat and they freeze up, and they have 100 times more training than any cop would, but yet they get into a panic situation where they're scared and the unexpected happens. And maybe that's what happens with this guy. It's not a defense for him, but I understand your point about the reporting of it and everything else, and you're, like you said, the higher ups covering shit up and all of that. I just, you know, I feel bad for everybody in this situation, and I'm glad you're kind of bringing this stuff out.
Yeah, and I'm glad you call in with, you know, your own experience about how you feel it. This taser might have saved this guy's life because the cop might have shot him instead. Thanks for calling. Anything else you want to say?
No, I'm going to. What exactly are you reading from? I didn't catch the beginning of the program.
I'm reading a series of articles. This is an article. They're from different places. I kind of Googled for Oscar Grant, on news, and I came. This is from the San Francisco Bayview News Analysis, and it was posted yesterday. And I don't know who wrote it. I'm not quite sure who wrote it. So you might want to go online and check it out.
Okay.
And there's a whole bunch of comments, which I'm not going to go into because I got other stuff to read. But you know, it's. There, of course, as you know, there was some really serious stuff happening up in Oakland last night. A lot of people just lay down on the street in the way Oscar did. And, the media, of course, covered the fires and the broken windows and didn't cover the protest much. I mean, but apparently there was a lot of angry people at that BART station. There was a BART board of directors meeting. I'm going to try to look into that, too, and see what the word is with that.
Yeah, and there was, I don't know if you listened to 101 earlier, they had people calling in and asking about, you know, whether or not it was safe, if it was justified that they were attacking the Oakland PD, since these were BART cops. You know, the Oakland PD had nothing to do with it, and the businesses had nothing to do with it. And did you hear any of that on the radio?
I didn't, you know, and I...
It was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the issue, of course, is, I think, not so much, you know, is the Oakland police significantly different than BART in terms of how the media covers them and how
right.
they're accountable and how they're, you know, vastly insulated from any kind of transparency? I doubt it.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, if anybody's got more information on that, I'd like to hear that. So.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
All right. Thank you, Robert.
All right, man. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Phone lines are open, 427-3772. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, and again, 427-3772. You can be a part of this discussion talking about the killing of a man in BART, in the BART station on New Year's Eve. As I look online in order to see if there's been any updates on this situation in terms of protests, what do I find? Oscar Grant rally photos. Protests now going on Jack London Square, and we got a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello? Hello?
Robert.
Yes, I can turn down your radio.
I just talked to you. Your audio is really going downhill. I can hardly hear anything on the radio from you anymore.
Thank you very much. I just turned up my mic, and I appreciate you bringing it to my attention.
No problem.
But, yeah, okay.
Okay, bye.
Thank you. So the this at 4:10 today, there were people apparently gathered at Jack London Square. That was 4 hours ago, 3 hours, 3.5 hours ago, and they were. And there's a lot of commentary about the issue. And I, you know, I'm not up in Oakland. I'm more concerned about police conduct in Santa Cruz. I think a lot of the same considerations apply. A lot of the same. Soft soaping goes on. We saw it happen in something, you know, as blatant as the DIY political investigation infiltration of the New Year's Eve event several years ago, when the same officer who ordered the undercover investigation of a peaceful political group was the same officer who was assigned to investigate himself. I mean, Deputy Chief Kevin Vogel, who's a nice guy, by the way. I like him. Personally, I don't like the way he acts in the police department. But it's like the police department has shaped and changed him. I have a lot of respect for some of the things he's done on an individual level, and I like him, as I say, personally. We chat whenever we run into each other at city council. But I have a lot of problems with some of the policies he supports, and... that not just he supports, but that then mayor and now again mayor Cynthia Matthews supported. That was back in 2006, I believe. And yeah, 2006. So we really should look at what's going on in Santa Cruz, and that's what I'm going to do now with a few interviews, kind of to update us. This is almost a month ago, these interviews, but they give us some idea of what was going on and still going on downtown. If you have different experiences or similar experiences you don't think are being covered, or commentary or breaking news of any kind, please give a call and we'll talk. 427-3772.
November 11th, about noon, we're in front of Borders on Pacific Avenue. Thursday, talking with...
I can't find any tape yet. Sky.
Sky. And you say, Sky, I've just been told by someone you know that you had a rather unfortunate and rather serious episode with the police.
Yes, I was attacked on the beach, robbed. My stuff was stolen. The homeless people came. I was just new in town for a couple of days. They came to my rescue. They called the police. The police didn't write a report. They just told me that if I'm hanging out with homeless people, I get what I deserve. They all got together and went out searching for the guy, but they never found him.
What was taken from you?
$990, a leather coat, a purse, but luckily my wallet wasn't in there.
What about you?
This will be coming soon.
That's it.
And when did this happen?
The beginning of October.
And do you remember how many police officers showed up and how long it took them?
I think it was two cars, and they were only there for a few minutes.
And what was the lag time between the time you called and the time they arrived?
Probably about a half hour.
And do you remember the names of any of the officers?
Paco was one of them, the one that told me that. M. Paco.
And did you request, did he make out a police report?
No, he didn't.
Did you ask him to?
Yeah.
And when this happens, although it's no guarantee anything would change, one good thing to do is to ask for the sergeant. Say, send your sergeant over because I don't think you're giving me adequate treatment. Not that the sergeant will give you adequate treatment. Are you outside yourself now?
Yes.
And how have you been treated since then by the police and by members of the, by merchants in the community and others in the community?
The merchants are pretty good. The police are always around, so I try to stay out of the bad spots where they're, like, around the boardwalk, but I don't think I should have to because, you know, I like the beach. That's why I came back to Santa Cruz.
So they've told you to they, have they advised you to stay out of the so-called bad spots, or they they told you to stay out of the bad spots?
They told us. If there's more than six people, they bring a paddy wagon down and start arresting people.
And has this actually happened to you on any occasion?
No, but it's happened to my friends.
And do you remember the last time this happened? Or
About 3 weeks ago, I guess.
Remember where it happened?
At the beach by the lifeguard towers.
And any more details about, like, what went down? Did they claim people were drinking? Did they claim people were sleeping? Did they claim people were breathing?
Yeah, drinking, dogs barking too loud, just too many people on the beach together. So
what time was this? Like daytime, nighttime?
Morning.
Like before dawn or after dawn?
After dawn.
And this, again, you weren't there directly, so you didn't see it, but this is what you heard, right?
No, I was up on the benches.
And you saw some of this?
I saw it all.
You saw it all. And so what happened? A paddy wagon arrived?
Yeah, and it took about five people away, six people away. Some of them are still in jail.
And was this, you know, on old warrants? Was this on new charges? Were you close enough to hear any of the discussion?
No, I wasn't.
Okay. But it did concern you.
Yeah, it did. My boyfriend was one of them.
I hear you. And has he been released?
Yeah, he's been released. He was only held for 5 hours.
Did he say why he was held?
No, I'm not sure. I didn't really ask.
Speak of the devil. Police car just passed by here. He did. Well, that's nice. He's got to check his list twice. We're talking with Skye.
Skye.
And is there anything more you want to tell us or anything that you'd like the community to know about this?
No, I just think they should stop harassing people. I mean, they don't want you on the beach. They don't want you at the parks. They don't want you hanging around downtown. I mean, where are you supposed to go?
Somewhere else.
Yeah. Somewhere else, yeah.
Well, you know, Skye, you're welcome to join us if you got time and you feel like it. We're going to be shadowing police and videoing them and seeing how they treat people downtown and also interviewing other people. So that's what we're going to be doing for the next hour or so here.
Yeah, we've got to go. I just
appreciate you coming over to tell us.
For Tater, so he's a friend of mine.
Thank you, Skye.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Have a good day.
All right.
So it looks like this was an early cop watch, which HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and the Human Rights Organization, another group both concerned with civil rights for homeless people, has been doing with increasing frequency downtown. In fact, we have another one scheduled, for those of you who are interested in a Santa Cruz cop watch, next Tuesday afternoon at 1 o'clock, which is, incidentally, the first city council meeting, Santa Cruz City Council meeting of the year. Usually they have them at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and 7 o'clock at night for those who want city council meetings. The cop watch, again, is going to be at 1 o'clock, probably go till 3, and we're going to be doing it in front of Borders Bookstore. That's the large bookstore on Pacific Avenue at the cross street Soquel and Pacific, and we're usually on Pacific Avenue about a quarter of a block down. So if you want to either volunteer or just check out what we're doing, if you have a report to make and you prefer to make it in person, come on down. That's going to be 1 o'clock on Tuesday, 5 days hence. If you want more information about it, call the HUF line, 423-HUF, 423-4833, and I'll try and help you out. I'm also hoping to post something on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media, which usually doesn't censor my stuff, though it did actually censor one of my comments today, sadly enough. Just kind of mentioning this in passing. Gaza has provoked a lot of concern. I think that was the issue. Let me double check here. See where the censorship occurred. Santa Cruz Indie Media. Yeah, it had to do with the interview with Stephen Zunas. Stephen Zunas got interviewed on Free Radio here by old lady Scarms, I believe. And I didn't hear the whole interview. I read some of the comments I'm generally in agreement with, and I'm glad to be informed about what's going on in Gaza by Stephen Zunas. Can't speak as to the accuracy of it all. But it seemed clear to me, looking at a comment, some of the comments that are online, that the indie media people obviously censored a comment, because the other comments are referring to that comment, and we don't know what the hell they're talking about, because the indie media censors and their brilliance removed the appropriate comments, so we can't follow the dialogue. So I added a comment that suggested that indie media do what other indie media folks, other indie media locals do in Los Angeles and elsewhere, and that they hide comments that they feel are inappropriate, they don't like. I suspect it was a pro-Israeli government comment. And let the reader herself or himself decide if they want to follow that discussion. They censored my comment. Depressing, but true. And so it has to, it has to be mentioned, because I don't think this kind of censorship is helpful. And if any Indie Bay people want to call in to debate or discuss it, I'd be happy to do that. I don't think they usually want to do that, because censors, by their very nature, like to remain anonymous. They don't want to be come out and face the pitiless glare of publicity. It's kind of a, it can be embarrassing. What you have to justify and excuse yourself and what you do. In any case, let's get back to more uncensored testimony from the street. Again, I think we're talking around December 11th downtown.
So we are talking with Madcap Mia, who's houseless at the moment. She was a participant in the sleepout a week ago. Today is December 13th, I think so. No, the 14th, 2008, and I'm downtown. It's raining, so I'm in my sticker mobile talking with
Mia.
And Mia, you're you have some criticisms to make of the tweaker staff up at the Armory.
Yes. There's several people up there, two girls in particular, who tweak. They come to the Armory tweaked out, and they're monitors. These are people who are actually monitoring the homeless people and making rules.
Yeah. You mean making rules, or supposed to, are they actually sitting down in a legislative parliament kind of thing, or are they just enforcing rules or just enforcing orders that they have either been told to enforce or they've decided upon?
They've decided upon them. All the rules that were first placed there by the military as a condition of our stay were presented to us the first day we got there. Mm-hmm. Since then, these two girls have made up some rules of their own.
The names of the girls?
Victoria and Hope.
And what do they look like?
Well, one's kind of on the chunky side, voluptuous, I would say. And the other is thinner. Mm-hmm. They both have long hair.
Mm-hmm. You said they've made up some particular rules.
Well, like one morning, this one young man who helps out with the monitoring, and it's a volunteer thing, was reprimanded. They kicked him out for a night because he woke up 5 minutes before the wake-up time, and several people went over and asked him for a cigarette. So they cited him for talking while other people were sleeping and kicked him out.
Did his talking wake you up?
Nope.
And how did you learn about this?
He came and talked to me about it, and they were very, very loud and boisterous about accusing him of being noisy.
Did they Did they level these accusations during the sleepy time period, or in other words, were they saying, were they waking people up themselves with their accusations?
No, they waited until everybody was up.
And what was this man's response?
Well, he was very upset, and he came and talked to different people, myself for one, and I had heard the whole thing, so I already knew what was going on, and frankly, I had to side with him. Nobody was bothered by him talking except for these two girls.
According to his account?
No, according to their account. They were saying that, he was waking people up before they needed to get up. But that just wasn't the truth.
And this wasn't a rule that the armory personnel had told you when you arrived?
No, this was a rule the girls made.
Any other rules come to your mind?
Yeah, like, well, we all understand that all the mattresses have to be put into the locker before we can go out and have a cigarette break. But they've also added, the girls added a new rule that we cannot have a cigarette until all the blankets are folded and put in a bag and also hauled out to the garage.
And what's the impact of this on smokers? You guys go bananas? Or?
Well, it's just that some people are so slow when they first wake up. And when you have a bunch of people who are already packed up and ready to go and all they want to do is have a cigarette, and then they're waiting on somebody who's barely coherent when they wake up because, you know, different people are different.
Mm-hmm.
So it puts those people in a position of being the bad guy because they're holding everybody up from having a cigarette.
How long have you used the armory for?
I've used it for a couple of weeks now.
And how does it work for you?
It's okay. It's not bad. The worst thing about it is these two girls.
Have they ever directed you to do something that you found inappropriate?
No, but one night they were... Yeah, one night I was sleeping. I was along one of the sides of the inner building there. My mat was, and I was sleeping, and while I was sleeping, they decided my bed had to be moved because it was too near to the heat control,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted a clear path to it. So she elected three people to walk over, surround my bed, and move me.
Move you or move your bed?
Move the bed with me in it.
Huh.
Well, here I wake up, and these three people are surrounding me, and I'm like, ah!
Almost like an alien invasion.
Yeah. and they said, oh, we have to move you because, you know, the heat control is here. And they had to push me way over by the door. They couldn't push me over toward the inner part mm-hmm. of the room. No, they had to push me all the way over by the door because she had to have a clear path. It had to be a path.
It seemed unreasonable to you?
Yeah. Yeah, because she made me sleep by the cold door where people were coming in and out.
So, have other people had complaints about these two?
Almost everybody is complaining about them. But they wield the power to be able to kick people out for no reason.
Whoa. Well, I expect you to monitor these complaints in the future as well as look into the infamous situation at the Greek Orthodox Church where...
I got a camping ticket for camping there, and we were all told that we could be there.
By?
By the Orthodox Church.
And this was about what date?
This was... God, what was it?
Probably November, maybe early December.
Yeah, It was November when I got it. And I still haven't been able to take care of that yet because it's not in their computer.
No, it takes at least a month for it to show up. Although they tell you you're supposed to respond within a month, which is kind of a catch-22 situation.
Mm-hmm.
You're also looking for ufologists in the area. You might be able to assist you in some personal investigations you're looking into. So if anybody is into ufology... wishes to reach Mia, give a call to the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I will pass on the information to her. Or is there another contact point for you?
No, I don't have a phone anywhere yet.
Anything else you want to add, lest you be abducted in the meantime and us not be able to find you?
No, just keep smiling. It's all a joke anyway.
Philosophical in her madness. That's Mia.
This is a funny world we live in.
Thank you, Mia. Mia was a part of the sleep out at the in front of Borders on UN 60th Declaration of Human Rights Anniversary Day, or actually December 6th, 4 days short of that 60th anniversary, but the night we did it. Any comments about anything that's happened on the street in the last week you want to mention?
No, just that it's gotten very quiet to the point of feeling desolate out here now that they've chased all the artists away. There's new people that have come in and they're playing instruments out there, but all of the people that were here when I first got here have been chased out. They're gone. They no longer play.
And that's the word from Mia on the streets in the rain. You can find her perhaps huddled in a doorway, perhaps sipping a cup of coffee from change, which she's spare change. But you're not much of a beggar, I understand it, Mia.
I don't like it. I'm used to working for my living.
What kind of work?
I'm a certified nursing assistant.
So if you have any jobs for certified nursing assistants, leave a message at 423-4833. Thank you, Mia.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure, by the way.
Mine too. So it's the Measure K Commission on the 15th of December, 2008, about 5:30.
And this actually is an interesting audio. This is the twice yearly meeting of the commission or the committee that's charged by the voters, because the city council wouldn't pass this. In fact, they tried to keep it off the ballot initially. The city attorney wanted it off the ballot, but it was passed by 64% of the voters. It makes marijuana use in private by adults, any marijuana use, whether recreational or medicinal, supposedly the lowest enforcement priority for the Santa Cruz Police Department and presumably other city enforcement agencies. However, the police department went to court and sued Theodore Carey and the proponents of this measure in order to remove the accountability provision that asks the police for the records. And therefore, they were able to get a consent decree essentially crippling the Measure K committee, on top of which members of the committee were not appointed. And for months after the committee was assembled, the staff person, Tina Scholl, is also the staff person for other agencies like the Public Safety Committee, which is a blatantly pro-police group of the city council. And herself has been, I've watched her at meeting after meeting, has essentially directed the committee into avoiding any kind of pressure on the city council or the police department to make records public, which they would need to have in order to see if, in fact, the police department is making marijuana enforcement in private the lowest priority. And the situation has gone from worse to utterly worse at this meeting. I'm actually thinking of postponing playing this tape until I have committee member, I keep saying commission, but it is committee member, Anita Henry in the studio. I may give her a call, actually, and I think I'm going to do that right now and have her here when this plays so she can actually give some commentary, because she was present when this was going on. And I think what I'm going to do now instead is give you a little music and then play some other stuff. So stay tuned. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, and the call-in number is 427-3772.
The sun's gone down, the shutters drawn, the curfew bell has tolled. The fox is lurking around the farm, the barn owl's wings unfold. In the candlelight tonight you might hear to your alarm the midnight band of Captain Swing as he rides from farm to farm. All over silver door set, the flames are leaping high. The ricks are burning, who's the cause? Captain, swing not I. All over Dorset, the flames are leaping high. The ricks are burning, who's the cause? Captain, swing not I. The sheep are safely in the fold, the shepherd deeply sleeps. The ploughman reels back from his drink, through woods the poacher creeps. Squire retires on bed of brass with one thing on his mind. If Captain swings this way tonight, there'll be no corn to grind. All over Dorset, the flames are leaping high. The ricks are burning, who's the cause? Captain, swing not I. All over Dorset, the flames are leaping high. The ricks are burning, who's the cause? Captain, swing not I. Labouring man is on his knees, nowhere can he get hired, since new machines that do the work the farmer has acquired. But how he sweats when he reads the threats on paper morning brings. Destroy your gear or else I swear you'll pay, sign Captain Swing. All over Dorset, the flames are leaping high. The ricks are burning, who's the cause? Captain Swing, not I. All over Dorset, the flames are leaping high. The ricks are burning, who's the cause? Captain, swing not I. Sun's gone down, the shutters drawn, the curfew bell has tolled. The fox is lurking around the farm, the barn owl's wings unfold. In the candlelight tonight you might hear to your alarm the midnight band of Captain Swings. He rides from farm to farm. All over Dorset, the flames are leaping high. The ricks are burning, who's the cause? Captain Swing, not I. All over Dorset, the flames are leaping high. The ricks are burning, who's the cause? Captain Swing, not I.
And that, of course, was more of Roy Bailey from Coda, Captain Swing. A couple of quick announcements. There's going to be some action happening tomorrow, Friday the 9th, 7 p.m. sharp, Resource Center for Nonviolence at 507 Broadway has Dr. Stephen Zunas, Sarni Abed, and George Cadman talking, our own George Cadman. She's on sabbatical at the moment, but she comes into Free Radio and does work still. In fact, she just called me and wanted me to remind folks that this and other things are happening around the a murderous occupation of the Gaza and the recent invasion there by the Israeli government. That's going to be a film screening of The Killing Zone. Dispatches, The Killing Zone, again, 7 p.m., Resource Center for Nonviolence, discussion afterward. It's also going to be a protest and candlelight vigil 2 hours before, 5 o'clock, at the Santa Cruz Clock Tower. Join us, stand against the brutal siege in Gaza, Israeli apartheid, and the oppression of the Palestinian people. And you can help make signs at the Resource Center for Nonviolence at 515 Broadway. I'm not sure why it says 507 Broadway. I think it's 515 Broadway. I guess 507 is right next door, so either it's 515 or 507. Try them both. You can meet at the RCNV, Resource Center for Nonviolence, or the Resource Center for Scott Kennedy, as I like to call it. Not because I disagree with Scott on issues of the Middle East, but because he's such a repressive character locally, as a former mayor, and that's another story. But in any case, these stories sometimes get intermingled. Resource Center for Nonviolence, 2 p.m. on Friday. If you want to make signs, 5 p.m. you want to show up for a protest, the clock tower, 7 p.m. you want to be present for the movie and the discussion. And I believe that is what is cooking on the bulletin board. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert. Name of the show, Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We have an hour to go. Call-in number, 427-3772. I'm still trying to reach Measure K committee member Anita Henry by phone. I am going to postpone this Measure K tape until Sunday. I come back at 9:30 on Sunday because I'm hoping I can get Anita in the studio to provide some live commentary. She actually does make commentary, trying to allow members of the public to speak as the chair censors people. I actually was initially locked out of the room, or that certainly was my impression. The chair insisted the doors were not locked, which she demonstrated by walking around and going in, but then again, she probably had a key, so it's hard to tell what actually happened. But I know that I couldn't get in until one of the members inside opened the doors, which violates, of course, the Brown Act or Public Meetings Act. Anyway, let's get back to the streets. Here's some more interviews from the street. I believe we're talking a couple weeks later. This is later in December, and we actually may get to the actual date, but in the meantime, it'll be a mystery. So here we go.
No one. And we're here in front of the close to the Del Mar Theater. It's about, I don't know, 6:30 in the evening. It's raining. There's an eve here. This is the old Host Center, now some sort of empty storefront gallery, it's called. And no one, you noted that you've been to the police station recently to deliver a message.
Yes, I told them that I'm not going to deal with them arresting me without cause anymore, that I will not stand for it. They will have to fight me to detain me the next time that they illegally arrest me.
Now, when was the last time that you were taken into custody?
It was about a week ago, but I'm not quite sure. I'm a little bit crazy, so I'm not too good with numbers and letters or dates.
What do you remember about that particular incident?
Well, every day for a week, it seems like, or maybe every day for 8 days or so, I'm not sure. The police arrested me on Pacific for what I can determine as no reason, seeing as how they gave me no tickets, and I can't see why they even tried to put me in jail. I did nothing wrong at all.
Now, were they different officers or the same officers? I see a squad car driving by now.
I don't know if it was the same or different. All I know is that it was a uniform and Santa Cruz police, except for maybe one time I might have been taken in by an unmarked police car.
And did they tell you what they were taking you in for?
No.
And how long were you held in jail?
For a total, I'm not sure. The time slipped by me. I couldn't remember precisely.
Was it generally during the day or at night? Or
it was during the day when there was lots of people around. And I've heard a few people telling me that, hey, they arrested you for no reason. You should do something about that.
And the arrest involved one officer, two officers. How many officers were involved?
It depended on the circumstance. There was a couple times. There was one, I think, twice. I'll give you an example. I was standing in front, or excuse me, beside a man who was playing an accordion. Mm-hmm. And he was playing, and the police officer came up to me and simply grabbed me by the arms and put me on the sidewalk and arrested me. And I didn't do anything at all, except for sit next to, not next. Oh, I guess that's why he took me in, because I was sitting next to the guy who was playing the accordion.
And where was this?
This was over a few blocks, maybe two or three blocks from here.
Do you remember what kind of a store was nearby? Or
I'm not sure. I'm not too familiar with the store names.
Do you remember who was sitting next to you?
Well, the guy was standing, the accordion player, dressed in costume.
Oh, Morgami, probably, the great Morgami.
Likely the guy who says it takes a lot of balls to play on a city.
Now, did he have any objection to your being next to him? Because usually Morgami plays alone. He's a big act. He's got, you know, all kinds of fancy costumes.
Well, he didn't have any objection. The police officer did.
Did Morgami object to your being arrested?
No, he kept playing. He was doing his business. I was doing mine. But probably the most recent event is I've decided that because of my mistreatment and abuse through the years, that I'm no longer going to be an American citizen. I've renounced my citizenship and my name and claim sovereignty, and that this is my own nation. My body is what I control, and that's all, and I can barely do a job at that.
And hence the name No One?
Yes.
You want to tell us what your previous name was?
Absolutely,
if you don't want it.
Well, my previous name was Corey Lloyd.
Say it again.
Well, Casey. I go by Casey. That's my. That's what most everybody knows me.
Okay. Anything you want to add?
Well, that wasn't exactly my previous name, seeing as how I'm in a state of ever-changing. I suppose anybody who would recognize me might be able to call me by that, but unless they judge me as a person, individual, that, I don't know. I just think that if my sovereignty is recognized by anybody, they will recognize I'm no one from nowhere.
All right. Hey, JC, have you ever seen him get arrested, Casey?
I don't recall. I think so. A few weeks ago, maybe, down here. I don't recall the details.
Because he feels he's been arrested frequently, like daily, on a daily basis.
The cops know that.
Hey, I'm down here at, goodness, it's the nearly 10 o'clock club in front of New Leaf Market on Monday, the 22nd of December. And we have a gathering of goodness. It's about 15, 20 people, mostly men, a few women. We have all kinds of questionable people who are concealing their identities, keeping a low profile. How's it going down here?
Wonderful.
It's kind of chilly, but it's not raining.
It's not that cold. I'm from Arkansas, so this is not cold to me.
Carmel, so it's cold.
Yeah, whenever it's really windy is whenever it's cold to me.
It's really windy tonight, it's true. Well, it's 10 o'clock, the drumming is about to end. Are you guys going to dare to go past the 10 o'clock deadline?
You know, I don't think so.
Any police hassles tonight?
Not tonight.
What about last night?
You know, they usually don't hassle me much. Maybe it's because I abide by the law.
Abide by the law. You tell me. What's your name, sir?
Oh, I'm Adam. How you doing?
And Adam, have you been hassled, or have you seen any hassling?
Yeah, actually, we were hassled today over by that corner down there on, I can't remember what street the name it is, but yeah, right by the... I think it's the taco shop. Yeah, across from the taco shop. Anyway, they said three males and one female, and there had been three different males and one different female right across the street, and somebody called the cops on them
for
smoking weed.
Smoking weed.
Of course. But we weren't doing anything, and they came and harassed us, and I finally talked them out of it. So.
How many police?
Two. They had another guy, like, in the car or something, or down the street.
Yeah. But what time of day?
A male and a female. Like, 4, 5, maybe. Maybe a little after 5, I guess. I wasn't sure what time it was. It was late day. So, yeah.
How long did the interrogation take?
Oh, just they harassed us for, like, about a minute or something.
But this is hardly worth the tape, man.
No, I know. Oh, okay, maybe 2 minutes.
All right. Well, no. I mean, if it was a minute, it was a minute. But,
no, it's just because I talked them out of it, because they were wrong.
Who were the cops?
I don't know. Some guy with white hair and some girl cop that had brown hair. I don't know. Like, little past her shoulders. I don't know.
Thank you, man.
She had a gigantic nightstick that was about 3 feet long. It was pretty scary.
Sounds pretty exciting. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can now hear the music, Susan. Yeah, the music is about to end. But we got a report. I got a report yesterday from an anomalous source that one of our drummers was harassed by the police, but stood up to them boldly. And perhaps we'll get more information on that as time goes on. And these are the last strains of the music before the clock strikes. Like Suzanne has a small tape recorder, a good precaution to have when you're on the streets trying to perform.
And that could be it for the moment, at least as far as that particular tape goes. Let's go to something a little more recent. This is let's get back into the new year and hear some more recent interviews.
Tuesday after New Year's, and it's about 3:30. I'm downtown on Pacific Avenue talking with Fish. And Fish, you mentioned that you have an explanation as to why I've seen virtually no homeless people or travelers or street people in front of Borders, in front of New Leaf. There is a group of singers, religious gospel singers,
yes,
at Walnut and Pacific, but they're not homeless, but they're... okay, you know, no problem. But what's the reason for this absence? Is it, you know, is there a rainbow gathering 5 miles off the coast?
Nah. Everyone's worried that they're going to get tickets and they won't have enough money to pay for their tickets, so then they're going to go to jail.
Well, you've gotten some tickets, right?
I got one ticket last year, actually. I've been, what would you call the word?
Incognito.
Very incognito.
Like a low profile. In fact, Fish isn't your real name, is it?
No, it isn't.
Sounds fishy to me.
I'm invisible to the police, I think. At some points I am, and other points I'm not. I wish I was invisible.
So you're still sleeping outside?
Yes.
Deep in the woods or deep far away?
Far away. Yeah. Far away. Not that far, but it's a decent walk from where we live. But
so you're buried so the police don't come upon your campsite?
Yeah, definitely. We've had a few people we've met, but other than that, our spot's pretty secluded.
Well, I haven't seen any police today. I've only been down here for a few minutes.
That is good. That's very good. I haven't seen any either. We were walking at one direction, and I saw a cop standing right there. And then right across the street, I saw somebody standing on, sitting on a planter. So I know they're not completely doing their job, but there's...
the kind of shocking criminal behavior. What is your name, madam?
Sam.
And Sam, what do you have to contribute to this discussion?
I was just curious how long it takes for an infraction to turn into a warrant, because I had a ticket.
It takes about at least a month and a half for it to show up on the computer.
Okay.
Then you get another month to make a court date or pay the bail or... And then the ticket, usually if it's an infraction, goes south for collection rather than to warrant, depending on whether it's infraction or misdemeanor.
It was an infraction for sitting on a planter box the day after Thanksgiving.
You know, I don't know why I talk to scumbags like yourself, criminals who flout our laws, make us decent citizens ashamed of our town. I'm going to just leave this whole thing. Anything else you want to say there, Sam?
No, I'm okay.
How about you?
I'm all good.
Do I get a hug?
Yes, you do.
I hugged her. All right then, you guys.
Awesome.
Take care.
I'm so...
So anyway, it's around 11:30 on January 7th, 2009. Wow. And I'm talking with...
Justin.
And Justin Supper is a Cafe is, of course, a local newly opened cafe, branded anarchist and actually self-proclaimed anarchist by different authorities and non-authorities. But
and that was said rather quickly. That's the Sub Rosa Cafe on Pacific Avenue, about a block from Laurel Street. Again, it's a kind of a cafe, has a large outdoor area. Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, meets there every Wednesday at 9:30 in the morning, go till 11:30. And here's a report from Justin on an incident that happened on New Year's afternoon. I should say the afternoon of New Year's Eve.
And on New Year's Eve, the police apparently came here. I got a report from Wes Modes, who said he wasn't present when it happened, but police had showed up on one occasion and wanted to come in, and they were told that they weren't welcome and they should leave, and they left but said, we'll be back, and then they came back on New Year's Eve, and there was some kind of a fire marshal confrontation. What do you know about this, Justin?
When I showed up, the police were already at the door. Here inside the sort of courtyard area, people at Sub Rosa had locked it, you know, flipped it to the closed sign. And
they were, the police were in the yard, or they were outside
the gate? Yard.
How many police?
Two. There were two officers.
Sergeant, I understand. Was it Sergeant Harms and Officer Klein, perhaps?
I can't say. I mean, I don't remember the names.
I know that those were the two identified officers that Wes Modes talked about showing up earlier, and perhaps they showed up later as well.
It was the same people who had been here
before. What time was this when you were when you showed up here?
Oh, that's a good question. I feel like it was probably 1:30.
Afternoon of New Year's.
Yeah. Yeah. But regardless, they're here, and the gate was closed, and the people at Saprosa were telling people that they were closed just to sort of to mediate this situation with the police. Because
how many people were inside?
There were probably 8-9 people, you know, the people who were here hanging out.
We're talking about people who were actually inside the building, and the police were inside the fenced area, but not inside the building.
Right. They actually, everyone left the actual store, the place.
The internal building?
The internal building, yeah. And we're just hanging out in the courtyard playing music for the cops. Mm-hmm. And then what followed was the cops, you know, the cops said, you can't shut the door on us. That's a violation of fire code. We're going to call the marshal. And
I don't see how that would violate the fire code. It might violate some public accommodations law, but not the fire code.
The idea that you know, the door must remain unlocked during business hours, presumably. Although, you know, they put the sign to closed. So the cops, you know, left, and they parked across the street in the parking lot and just.
And you observed all this?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And they just waited in their car until the fire marshal showed up. He showed up. You know, the police were not allowed inside. You know, and everybody asked, you know, we all, like, asked each other, like, is it okay if we allow the fire marshal in? And we all agreed, yeah. So we let him in. And, you know, he didn't need to do an inspection, really. I mean, he came inside and he looked at it, but he had talked to... I don't know who he talked to, who represented Saprosa, but he just explained to him that, you know, we know this place is up to code. We worked with Wes, who managed, like, the construction of the building. Like, we're sorry about this. And then they went out. They left the courtyard, went out to the gate.
They being?
The fire marshal. And, you know, I guess
his police escort?
No, it wasn't a police escort. No, it was just another fire person.
You invited in the fire marshal and his associate?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, both in uniform. And, you know, then they left, they exited the gate, and the cops were waiting outside of the gate, and they just mediated the situation to the cops explaining to them.
As the fire marshal said specifically, these people are doing fine, there's nothing illegal, go deal with some, quote, crime, unquote?
That's possible. I'm not sure they exactly worded it that way, but...
How long did the whole process take?
Oh, wow. Probably, you know, from the point where they were waiting outside the door, the locked door, to when the fire marshal, you know, mediated the situation with the police officers, is maybe, you know, an hour and a half.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a situation where, you know, the police are not welcome here. For me, they're not welcome here. I wouldn't welcome them simply because of what they represent. The aggression, the oppression, that's, you know, here, local to Santa Cruz and the United States in general. So, just one of those things.
Anarchist dog.
Yeah, one of those, exactly, yeah. And that's, I mean, that about sums it up.
We've been talking with?
Justin.
Thanks, Justin. Yeah.
That's just because I wasn't there, so I just...
Michael Posner speaking now.
So when he came, it was Sergeant Harms, right?
And this is a discussion between Justin and People Power bike advocate Michael Posner, who has an office right next to the Sub Rosa cafe or space. And he was concerned about antagonizing the police. And this is the dialogue that followed between them, and I jumped into it as well.
Yeah, that's the thing. I wasn't here when they first arrived.
Oh, like, yeah, that's what I heard. That's what I heard from Wes.
No, he told me that he's already came. Mm-hmm. So what? So you don't know what happened when he first arrived.
He says that he was just coming by to like see what was going on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was.
But he had no.
No, I mean, the idea is, and that's what they said the first time they came here, which was, you know, they're just here to look around.
That's what you were told they would say. You weren't a witness.
Right, exactly. It was just dealt in the sense that, you know, you guys aren't welcome. It doesn't matter. Like, you're not welcome here. So then when they came back, were they aggressive in some way, or it was just the same thing, we want to look around, and people were like, no way.
Exactly.
Okay. And they just waited it out, you know. They're just standing here, just kind of police presence, you know, just standing here waiting.
Similar to what they do at borders, that essentially drives away people who are there, in essence. They just stand there with their arms folded, smiling.
Exactly.
Which has, you know, you would think that with an ordinary person, it's a matter of, you know, the right to public assembly. The problem with the police are is that they are in the habit of citing people for petty infractions that don't, you know, that are selectively enforced in Santa Cruz. That's my experience with them. And so it becomes a deterrent to other forms of public assembly by other people, particularly noticeable at the drum circle on Wednesday. When the police show up there, it discourages people from being there at all.
I think there are nuances. I mean, the drum circle, we know that the police have a history of trying to abrogate civil rights, whereas, you know, and at borders, apparently, I'm certainly willing to take your word at that, you know, whereas in other places, if they're standing around and there's no history of abrogating civil rights, I mean, you could consider giving them the benefit of the doubt in that case. I mean, it's a little different in the drum circle where they've already obviously tried to disrupt a civil right.
These are the same two officers who did those activities at those two different places. So, and frankly, I have nothing against Sergeant Harms as a person or Officer Klein. I know them both. I have friendly chats with them, extensive chats with them, which I play on the radio. But insofar as they've donned these uniforms and they have guns, tasers, and batons on their hip, and, you know, the actual person who started this cafe is being, you know, is facing misdemeanor charges for defending the drum circle. Still, right. He has to go to court in February on this issue. There is a real question as to, this is a private space as well. This is whether the police are welcome in this private space. I mean, it's open to the public, but they can also close it to the public if they want. I mean, to me, it's an important issue for homeless people. They try to do this all the time. They say, well, we have the right to refuse service to anybody. Businesses do this. So I'm sensitive to the rights of everybody to have access to public spaces. And now, is that your concern, Michael, or are you talking about having a good relationship with the police department, which is another matter entirely?
Well, that's my primary concern, is the idea of, you know, Sergeant Harms has told me that he's just wants to be treated as a member of the public. And so, yeah, my primary concern is that we don't artificially or for no reason create some kind of division or create bad feelings with anyone in the public. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the point I can empathize with him, you know, because he said, you know, it's just, in fact, I'd invite him to come by and talk to me, because People Power is interested in trying to find officers that aren't.
People Power has an office that's right next to Sub Rosa.
Right, and we're
bike church.
Right, and People Power is interested in trying to locate some bicyclists that aren't, some police people that aren't horrible to bicyclists, of which there is a definite tone in the police department sponsored by the chief, which is decidedly anti-cyclist. So we're always trying to look for, you know, police people that we might be able to try to create alliances with or try to change that tone a little bit. So I had told him to stop by and talk to me, and he says that he'd actually stop by initially looking for me, and then he thought as long as he's here, he'd go check out the info shop. And so I'm sensitive to the idea that any person would be treated in a suspicious or derogatory way when they come to what, certainly with regard to the hub, is really a primary public assembly point, you know. And so I am nervous.
Uniform?
Yeah, I mean,
well, because it's considerably different.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that in uniform, he was doing his job. Part of his job is to collect information, and part of what the police represents is, you know, oppressing free speech and limiting the rights of individuals. And I mean, I think that's just an honest fear that people know. Like, they've dealt with it. It doesn't come from suspicion or from, you know, dislike of the people themselves. It's more the idea that what they represent and what the info shop represents are just these extremes. But I mean, at the same time, I also agree with what you're saying. Like, yeah, I would love to see, you know, cops, more cops on bikes, or more cops who appreciate and are aware of what the cyclist community is trying to do.
I mean, my thought. Go ahead. I mean, I just don't see where it behooves us to act on fear, even if it's a... I agree with you, Justin, that's a well-founded fear. It's a fear based on real,
yeah,
real history, both in Santa Cruz and in the United States. But why act on fear in a specific case when there's no specific problem, you know? I mean, I feel like, you know, it's analogous to, like, in the hippie movement, like, putting flowers in the soldiers' guns or something. I mean, we need to... I feel like when there is an opening, then it behooves us to act out of compassion and not fear. Like, I just sort of feel like it's a bit of a bummer. I mean,
you can also judge what went on from what the police's reaction was. Mm-hmm. To call the fire marshal to penalize this group for closing the door shows an attempt to use their official authority in a punitive way that no citizen could get away with. No ordinary person who is not a member of the police department could have gotten the fire marshal out here on short notice. They were using official power to try to break in and show and assert official authority in a way that had nothing to do with a friendly, personal, I'm off duty, hi, what's cooking here. It was more an attempt that we got the fucking right to come in here, we're going to do it, you assholes. And they did that, they tried to do that, and people resisted it, I think quite appropriately, it sounds like to me.
Yeah, it's a mixture. I mean, I don't know. I mean, of course, with me, he had a whole different... Not of course, but with me, he had a whole different tact, and he was somewhat vulnerable and said that, you know, that... You know, he felt hurt. He didn't say he felt hurt, but he had that kind of somewhat veneer of vulnerability where, you know, like, I'm a member of the public, and golly, I would have really liked to be in there. So, and that does, you know, that does resonate with me.
This is a member of the public who won't say where he lives. I mean, in the sense, he won't even say if he lives in Santa Cruz. Right. I asked him that question, not what's your address,
right,
but
right.
Do you live in Santa Cruz? I'm not going to answer that question.
Right.
You know, why would a police officer be afraid of doing that? I mean, I mention this because... You know, and I want to hear what you have to say, too, but I'm sorry, that was just vulnerable? I don't think so. I mean, you know, in the same sense that, you know, Israel is vulnerable and therefore has to invade Gaza. Yeah, I suppose they're vulnerable in that way. I don't see it as a... Anyway, go ahead.
Well, I mean, clearly he's not scared of the info shop, or he wasn't, like, trying to protect himself, and he didn't claim that either. I mean, obviously he has a lot more power than, you know, anyone at Sub Rosa, but I think he felt dissed. You know, but then I agree with you that the way police in general react is out of this sort of using the power structure and often abusing the power structure.
That's not the way he reacted.
Right.
He reacted by asserting his authority improperly, actually.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. So, and I'm worried that, like, and that's another, you know, and that gets back to what you said in the beginning, like, are we trying to create good relationships with the police? Well, you know, it's a slippery slope because, you know, now I have a concern about the culture of city staff having a negative view about Sub Rosa and then maybe about the hub. And if it stems from this incident that was avoidable, then I kind of... Yeah, so...
Politician, you.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's one thing to, like, stand up to police abuse of power when it's clear and necessary. It's another thing to, like, create a conflict for no reason.
Like,
you
for
know?
Instance, when they call the fire marshal, standing up to that kind of abuse of power is appropriate, in your opinion.
I don't know. I'm thinking about it. But I don't think it's appropriate. I'm inclined to think it's not appropriate when they just come by to, like, create a confrontation with them. I mean, that seems like an unnecessary confrontation, and then it has these consequences, which aren't the responsibility of Sub Rosa or anyone else, but they still are. They're kind of, you know... They are consequences now we have to deal with, and yeah, I mean, it's sort of like pick your battles, you know.
Well, I think they did. I mean, the police, you know, Sepp Rosa did not go out and say to the police, you can't walk along this street, though that might have been appropriate considering what they do along those streets often. Instead, they said, you can't march in here in your uniform at this particular time. We'll close the fucking place down, as we have a right to do. We can have a right to close it down. Now, you might say, well, didn't bigots in the South do the same when African Americans walked in and, you know, tried to use the premises, or hippies used the side door? The difference is in the power structure. That's the difference. And that's often the difference when you talk about racism. You say, well, you got your black bigots and you got your white bigots. And the difference is that the white power structure controls pretty much the scene. It's considerably different, the different kinds of bigotry you have. At least that's my view.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that kind of theory, and I think it makes a lot of sense. And also, both in terms of an ideal version and a pragmatic version, I would suggest not acting out of... You know, like, for example, there's a cop that comes in the bike church and, like, fixes his bike. And so when he does that, even though he often comes in uniform, I guess he's sneaking out for a few minutes or whatever, like, he's not exercising power. And so I'd like to create as many possibilities to interact with police, which is not a power dynamic, as possible. So I would think that, you know, when someone's... And you do that too, Robert, because you talk to him and hang out with him or whatever, when he's not trying to exercise power or authority.
Even when he is.
Or even when he is, as long as he's not abusing it, and then you stand up to him,
well,
you know. So,
yeah, I mean,
the main point is to
expose the abuse of power and to discourage it, not to, you know, enable it. And that's, I guess that's the question, whether his coming in here enables it or you know, or discourages it. What's your thought on that, Jess?
He's just coming in here, you know, wandering around. I mean, he came in, he was on duty. It was him and his partner.
You actually didn't see it, right?
No. I mean, I was here when they were already here, doing their standing at the front of the door with their arms crossed, smiling deal, their tactic.
I mean, see, if I've been excluded from places where I really, years ago when I was excluded and my skin was thinner, or I actually had more belief in Christian ethics and satyagraha and the belief that you could shame people into acting in a conscience-filled way, I would pick it. I would tell everybody outside the bar, they won't let me in here. They won't let me in this saloon. They won't let me in this restaurant. I encourage you, you know, to tell them that I feel I'm being discriminated against. It's kind of a pathetic thing in a way. Although it had some impact. Sometimes I would get back into cafes from which I was excluded for one reason or another. And that's one thing. But an officer in uniform who knows why he's being excluded. He's being excluded because he's regarded as a thug. That is essentially a part of the power structure. However nice a human being he may be, he may go fix his bicycle, but what is he doing when he's not fixing his bicycle? I mean, is your contact with that person fixing his bicycle really going to change his behavior when he's not fixing a bicycle? I mean, it's like saying, you know, are you going to let the Nazis in and be real nice to them in hopes that, you know, they'll change their... They're nice to their wives. They care about the German people. You know, they're interested in full employment. That you can have common grounds with them. And some people who are very religious would say, yes, let's try to reach their hearts. But because they're part of a power structure that's military, police are similar in that regard, it may be a hopeless task.
Well, I think it behooves us to try until... I mean, I don't think we should be making ourselves vulnerable and trying to reach the arts when we're imperiling our institutions or our community or, you know, whatever. I'm not advocating for martyrdom, but yeah, I think, you know, if there's a situation that appears to be neutral where they're not exercising power, then yeah, we should try to reach out to those individuals. And I know in the bike movement, we've had some limited success with that. Like with the Gorilla Rail Trail, where we built a rail trail without permission and the police turned a blind eye to it because they liked it. They liked the Gorilla Rail Trail. And, you know, in countries where there's true social change, the police have to be are generally involved in it. I mean, the police and the army are institutions that can be won over against other corrupt power structures. And yeah, absolutely, I think you try to reach out and treat people like human beings with compassion and hope that something comes out of it, unless it appears like they might be abusing their authority, in which case you resist.
Yes. I mean, it seems to me that you have to look very closely at the countries where the police and the military go over to the people. Usually that happens when there is massive protest, thousands of people involved. And when instead you're at a different place in history where you have only small groups of people, relatively small groups,
and the power structure is really firmly entrenched. And when Ryan Coonerty gets the largest number of votes in the last election and is arguably the most reactionary candidate running for city council, it's a different scene.
I just gave you an example, though. In our
scene,
when we were out building the trail, the rail trail without permission on UP property, and because we had, you know, relatively good relationships with the police and other officials, the police turned a blind eye to it. There was a policeman that came by one day that said, I guess you guys probably should clear out, but can you smooth out this section first, you know, because it was obviously a ridiculous abuse of private property, and so we won over the police with regard to that, you know, that project. And so I totally think that's possible, and I think it's worth trying when you have nothing to lose. I mean, if they're starting to abuse power or they're demanding something of someone, then that's a real clear decision point, and I think at that point it makes sense to be very suspicious. But I mean, what does anyone have to lose by a police person wandering around, you know?
I know, I used to walk into bookstores, and there was a women's bookstore where they told me, you can't be in this area, this is a women's area. And I really felt upset and hurt by that, you know. But perhaps it was because I didn't understand that there are certain areas that they weren't trying to discriminate against me, they were trying to provide a protective area for people who normally have to constantly deal with men in certain ways that they don't want to have to deal with them. And in a way, this is sort of an area where maybe that's how the majority of people who come here feel. They don't want to have to worry about the police. You're nodding your head, Justin.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's one of those things where I just don't want to accept the... Rather than... I mean, like, for example, when you're building a gorilla railroad trail, bike trail, which is great, but at the same time, it's accepting that you need the police's authority in order to enact change, in order to make the world a better place. And I'd rather circumvent that system and prove that we can make things better without the need of that power structure. Well, I don't think it's that we need that power structure. It's a pragmatic recognition that the power structure exists. And I think that's exactly what I'm worried about at the Info Shop and the Hub right now, because if we get in a pissy match with the police, you know, I think it's likely the Sub Rosa will get shut down, you know. And so, and if they're abusing their authority, maybe that's worth it. You know, maybe it's worth it to, like, stand up to them, you know. But if nothing's really happening, I don't think it may, you know, it's like, I have a 3-year-old. You pick your battles. Sometimes you, like, let her have extra bananas, even though she already had too many bananas, you know. It's like,
your 3-year-old, is that really equivalent to the police department? I mean, you know, you do that because you actually have the real power, and you can move on the situation. When you don't have the real power, you're pretty jealous of keeping what little power you have, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but like I said, you got to be, I think it behooves us to be strategic and pragmatic and think about wanting to keep the Info Shop, you know, the Sub Rosa going, you know, because I mean, the way this officer behaved as far as calling the fire marshal is totally typical and relatively mild, but it's already having repercussions to Sub Rosa. And I think that if we get in a pissy match with the police, that's the kind of thing that will happen. And then,
but that was abusive behavior by the police officer.
I agree.
So
it was typical,
abusive, and relatively mild.
Become more subservient and friendly in order to respond to abusive behavior?
No, not as a way to respond to abusive behavior, but if it helps us to avoid conflict, as long as we're not. Giving in to any sort of, as long as we're not mitigating our values, then it could be a pragmatic stance to take. I mean, it's one thing with the farmers market where they're like disrupting civil space, you know, it totally makes sense to stand up to them, and often it makes sense to stand up to them, and I really appreciate you and others that do that, you know. But I think we should save the confrontations for examples where they're clearly abusing authority, of which there are many, you know, and especially putting those examples in the public eye. I mean,
it was a successful confrontation. It sounds like I wasn't here, and I'm not sure what my response would have been, but it sounds like the police were essentially told, you can't force your way into this business by a bogus fire marshal excuse, and we're able to, you know, we stand you off on that basis. And you're saying perhaps, oh, well, you offended Sergeant Harms. This is going to have repercussions in the police department. They're not going to be as nice, and they'll be looking for violations. You talk about closing this place down. There's a pretty extensive group of people who like this place and who support it. I don't think it's so easily done. And I think that, frankly, it would expose police malfeasance far more But maybe not. Maybe, I mean, it is true. They closed down
the place on Front Street.
The place, which are you talking, which you
the ECAP, are you, can we go off the...
Yeah.
And that was a discussion between Micah Posner, Justin, and myself, actually yesterday morning, right after the Huff meeting at the Sub Rosa Cafe, 9:30 to 11:30 every Wednesday morning. Come on down. On the issue of a police incident that happened where Sergeant Michael Harm sort of wanted to come into the Sub Rosa Cafe, apparently to chat with Micah, whose office is next door, and he was denied entrance, and because of his uniform and his police officer status, sergeant status, and he in turn called the fire marshal to insist that the place be opened up and he be allowed in, and the fire marshal mediated and found there were no fire code violations, and apparently either persuaded Harms to leave or said that, you know, they had a right to do what they were doing, and then there was a whole discussion around that issue. I'm hoping to continue this discussion with perhaps some more central figures in the Sub Rosa Cafe if they're interested, and Sergeant Harms if he's interested. I've kind of expressed some of my views already. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. You're listening to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. I'm Bathrobes Pierre. These are my broadsides, if only you could see them. And the phone number here, in case you want to call in and chatter with me in the remaining 15 minutes of the show before Uncle Dennis comes rolling in, is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. In case you have some secret missives for me, you just want to chat with me off air, give me a call on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I did get a message from my secret informant at the, it's not the armory tonight. Apparently the armory is closed for homeless people. I know they were doing, whether, you know, planning to invade Afghanistan with Obama leading the troops, or I'm not sure what they're doing. If there's some kind of exercises, perhaps. But it's there's an alternate shelter at the Grange, and the Grange apparently is full, full at 80, apparently. So there are people who have been turned away, according to what I've heard. And I just got a phone call, but the person who called has hung up. No, no. If you want to be on the air, you have to keep that phone ringing until I pick it up. 427-3772 is the call-in number. So think about that one for a bit. And while you're thinking, I'm going to do a little reading from another story which I failed to read and which I actually intended to read earlier. But first, of course, our caller. Hello there, caller. You were on Free Radio, but by cracky... You weren't even on Free Radio, actually. Your dial tone, or our dial tone, or somebody's dial tone was on Free Radio. Call back. If you want to catch me off air, you have to call the Huff line. But I won't catch the call for another couple hours, probably. But, well, hang in there anyway. Here's something from racewire.org, R-A-C-E-Wire.org, an update on the Fruitvale BART protest. And this is, I think this was this morning at 8:40 a.m. right before the BART Board of Directors meeting. It has to do with the shooting of Oscar Grant on New Year's, I think it was New Year's Day, in the back by a police officer as he lay restrained on his back after having protested at the threatened tasering of some of his companions at one of the BART stations, by an officer who stonewalled the issue and then subsequently resigned rather than face an internal investigation. No charges as of yet been filed, and police departments apparently have been babbling about how maybe the guy intended to tase him, and there aren't any videos when there were, and all kinds of other bullshit from the police department up in Oakland. Here's a report. As I write this, there are no more than six helicopters, this was at 8:40 this morning, circling overhead in downtown Oakland on the first day of the 10th year since Amadou Diallo was brutally gunned down by police in New York City. I believe he was shot 42 times, Amadou Diallo. Oscar Grant was fatally shot in the back by a BART police officer, and the event was caught on video. As I write this, rumors are flying and media is fanning the riot flames, car and trash fires, police in riot gear and tanks, restaurant windows being smashed, tear gas and rubber bullets being used. We won't know the full picture till the night is over and the smoke clears. I guess maybe this was yesterday, last night. But the story of the successful nonviolent protest earlier this evening has been overshadowed by this angry chaos. What is absolutely clear is that folks are furious about the murder of Oscar Grant, furious that a week has passed with no statement or acknowledgement of what happened. What is clear is that we currently don't have community accountability over our police here in Oakland. In this bubble of progress, we are hampered by the same brutal power dynamics that plague the rest of the nation. Racially driven policing that allows the use of lethal weapons in the pursuit of justice is a failed model. What do we need? We need police to be accountable when they participate in brutality against us. In this situation, BART police should have issued a statement acknowledging what we all saw, including an apology from Johannes Maresli, that's the BART cop who murdered Oscar Grant, the officer who pulled his gun and shot Grant in the back. There also needs to be a transparent process for the officers involved to be charged and held accountable for what happened. Otherwise, this is just another brick in the wall between police and the communities they are paid to protect. We need community justice processes that allow us to address moments of tension and unrest without the lethal presence of police. In Detroit, Ron Scott and others are working actively on peace zones, where the community comes together to assess community crises and mete out restorative steps for the guilty party. They're not the only ones piloting this model. In addition, if police hope to gain our respect and trust in their process, they need to commit to disarming themselves of lethal weapons immediately and learn the skills of negotiation and community engagement. And he mentions a BART board meeting that was happening today at 9 a.m. And they need to hear our voices. We need ongoing supported focus on police brutality and accountability, even as we develop our own peace zones. It's no longer sufficient to get furious when a civilian is killed by police and maintain that fury until the officers are acquitted or resign. For the past 10 years, it has been nearly impossible to get sustained support for this kind of work from the foundation world. So as organizers, we have to sustain this work in other more community-based ways. I definitely want to shout out The Gathering, who have picked up this unpopular issue as it relates to juvenile justice with the commitment of Harry Belafonte. They are joining the Oakland Community for Actions next week. I've also heard that Uhuru will be hosting a meeting tomorrow evening to discuss accountability and healing. We need to express our gratitude to groups like Community Justice Network for Youth, who identified the gaping hole that exists in the nonprofit and organizing community of Oakland in terms of police accountability work. CGNY stepped up in a major way for today's nonviolent action, but they can't maintain this effort on their own. Bay Area groups have focused their work on young people of color. This political moment need you. And I know I am biased by the perspective of working at the Ruckus Society, but we need to engage in the deep training and skill development, pulling off large-scale, strategic, direct actions. There are ways to pull together mass actions in a short time period that gain media, build the power of our positions, and help the community to see and understand the situation and how they can get involved. Over the past few months, organizers from directly impacted communities, Bay Area immigrant youth and a multiracial lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer coalition have successfully shut down ICE headquarters buildings and protested Proposition 8 in downtown San Francisco using affinity groups, action teams, brilliant blockading tactics, and police and media liaisons. These actions were planned and pulled off in a very short amounts of time, and Ruckus is definitely not the only group that does this sort of skill building. Most importantly, in terms of tonight's event, there are also ways to de-escalate situations, even when people who aren't directly impacted by oppression start losing their composure. We know how to do this and must apply that knowledge or risk losing all credibility in terms of our demands for police, I mean for peace. And that's suggestions by a guy writing, posting on the Indie Bay / East Bay Indie Media site, update on Fruitdale BART protest. And I haven't seen any update on the BART board meeting. There may well be one by now. Perhaps that can be talked about by other broadcasters, or I may bring it up again on Sunday when I come back. My show resumes at 9:30 in the morning, although I often come in early to play flashbacks so you can delve into the historical record a bit with me trying to relate it to present actions. A couple of quick stories. Postal Service cuts off SRO tenants, defies state and local law, by Paul Hogarth. It's a January 8th story. While a private mailbox is something apartment tenants take for granted, residential hotel SRO tenants have had to organize to win this right. Can't let my microphone get away from me here. In 2006, San Francisco passed the SRO mailbox ordinance, and since then most nonprofit residences have complied, although most private hotels are in violation. In 2007, the legislature passed it at the state level, but the U.S. Postal Service, claiming federal preemption, now says they will cease delivering to individual mailboxes and SROs, except in hotels that installed them more than 3 months ago. This effectively shuts out tenants in private-run SROs, single-room occupancy hotels, where landlords have not complied with the law. Ironically, the same hotels with the worst habitability problems, the highest rates of vandalism, and the most complaints of desk clerks stealing the mail. Landlords are being let off the hook because the law can't be enforced, while the Postal Service, eager to cite their practice manual, won't explain how their policies get changed. If we need a federal law requiring the post office to deliver mail to private hotel residents, SRO tenants will pursue that option, but that shouldn't be necessary, as denying private mail delivery to SROs could violate federal equal opportunity, equal protection legislation. And there's more to the story. I'm realizing we don't really have SROs in Santa Cruz. We have, you know, kind of apartments and condos and... microphones that keep falling out of their containers, but I'm going to keep working with them. We're almost at the end of the show, and I will be, as I said, coming back. If you want to check out what's happening with human rights on the street, all you got to do is walk outside, of course, and hang out and talk to folks downtown and elsewhere. And please phone in reports at 423-HUFF. I'm working on creating a CopWatch blog, which would allow us to itemize the particular complaints against particular police officers in Santa Cruz, as well as give the officers a chance to respond with their own side of the story if they choose to do so, as they sometimes do. We've heard some police officers try to explain what they're doing and discuss what they're about, as Sergeant Harms has done on the air, and I commend him for his candor and his willingness to do that, although I, of course, usually disagree with him on what he's saying. But if you want to help with a CopWatch blog, or you want to volunteer for any of these civil rights kinds of projects that we're working on locally, other ones involve going to the police station and getting public records and making sure that they don't refuse to serve, as they have done to me on a couple of occasions because they claim you're not allowed to access them with a tape recorder in hand. Again, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's about it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides tonight. Come to the Human Rights Organization meeting if you're interested at 2 o'clock at the Cockeria Vallarta on downtown Pacific Avenue Saturday afternoon at 2. And I will be back at 9:30 on Sunday. Coming up next is Uncle Dennis's from the Cream of the Dregs. Let's go out a little music while Dennis sets up. And call me off air at 423-HUFF if you want to chat about something or if you have any questions. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
I was 19 when I came to town. They courted the summer of love. Burning babies, burning flags, the hawks against the doves. And I took a job in a steamy down on Cauldron Street. Fell in love with a laundry girl who was working next to me. She was a rare thing, fine as a bee's wing. so fine a breath of wind might blow her away. She was a lost child, she was running wild. She said, as long as there's no price on love, I'll stay. And you wouldn't want me any other way. Brown hair zigzag round her face and a look of half surprise, like a fox caught in the headlights, there was animal in her eyes. She said, young man, oh, can't you see, I'm not the factory kind. If you don't take me out of here, I'll surely lose my mind. She was a rare thing, fine as a bee's wing, so fine a breath of wind might blow her away. She was a lost child, she was running wild. She says, as long as there's no price on love, I'll stay. And you wouldn't want me any other way. Bust around the market towns, we pick fruit down in Kent. We could tinker pots and pans and knives wherever we went. And I said that we might settle down and get a few acres dug, fire burning in the hearth and babies on the rug. She said, young man, you're a foolish man, that surely sounds like hell. You might be lord of half the world, but you'll not own me as well. She was a rare thing, fine as a bee's wing, so fine a breath of wind might blow her away. She was a lost child, she was running wild. She says, as long as there's no price on love, I'll stay. You wouldn't want me any other way. We were camping down the Gower one time, the work was pretty good. She thought we shouldn't wait for the frost, I thought maybe we should. We were drinking more in those days, and our tempers reached a pitch. And like a fool I let her run with the rambling itch. She was a rare thing, fine as a bee's wing, so fine a breath of wind might blow her away. She was a lost child, she was running wild. She says, as long as there's no price on love, I'll stay. And you wouldn't want me any other way. Last year I heard she was sleeping out down on the Derby beat, white horse in her hip pocket and a wolf hound at her feet. And they say she even married one time a man named Romany Brown, but even a gypsy caravan was too much settling down. She was a rare thing, fine as a bee's wing, so fine a breath of wind might blow her away. She was a lost child, she was running wild. She says, as long as there's no price on love, I'll stay. And you wouldn't want me any other way. They say her flower has faded now, hard weather and hard booze. Maybe that's just the price you pay for the change you refuse. She was a rare thing, fine as a bee's wing, and I miss her more than any words can say. If I could just taste all her wildness now, if I could hold her in my arms today, I wouldn't want her any other way. She was a rare thing, fine as a bee's wing, so fine a breath of wind might blow her away. She was a lost child, she was running wild. She says, as long as there's no price on love, I'll stay. You wouldn't want me any other way.
Little bit of Roy Bailey here on a Thursday night at Free Radio Santa Cruz. A little something Robert left us on the way out the door. We'll see you again on Sunday, right, Robert?
I'm afraid so.
All right, if you wanted more of it, you know, if you really are into inflicting your ears with self-abuse, what, about 9:30 Sunday morning?
Or earlier.
Or earlier. Yeah, that's the Bathroom Spears Broadsides with Robert Norris airs again on Sunday. Morning, I'm Uncle Dennis. Welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Happy New Year. This is my first night back on the air. Wanted to let folks know that starting right about now, 8 o'clock, is the Sub Rosa weekly open mic. You heard a little bit about Sub Rosa Info Center on Robert's show. But he might not have told you that they have an open mic on Thursdays from 8 to 10 p.m. The sign-up for that started about a half an hour ago. But music, poetry, performance, whatever you want to do, bring your creativity, your artistic genius to 703 Pacific Avenue in downtown Santa Cruz right now. If you have any questions, try their webpage, subrosaproject.wordpress.com. And they are asking you to bring a few bucks to the door. $5 is suggested, but no one will be turned away for lack of funds. So, Try that open mic down there at the Sub Rosa, starting right about now. This is From the Cream to the Dregs, and we're going to be playing the music of the 60s and the 70s for the next few hours. About 9 o'clock, we'll have the Earth First Update, and 10 o'clock, we'll have our Spotlight Group of the Week, an entire hour devoted to one group, and it's going to be Moby Grape. So stay tuned for that. Here's Quicksilver Messenger Service.
this airplane on.
Not even, yeah.